spiritual and religious activities emotionally, physically, logically.
Right.
When I say emotionally, physically, and logically, I purposefully mention these three terms here. Let's start with physical set of activities. Take your children to the community centers and get them to volunteer to do certain things. You know, clean up the place or vacuum the place or,
right.
you know,
the mosques,
set it up.
Right.
Or the mosques, set it up.
At least participate in the activities.
And then you have different programs during the various months. For example, the month of Muharram, the month of Maha Ramadan. So at the time of Iftari, when people come together for breaking their fast, let them volunteer, go around, distribute, you know, the dates or the salt,
right.
or whatever. Let them take up some physical activity which is related to the religion.
Right.
Let them be physically involved in various activities. Let them wash the dishes at the end of the... Let them, you know, gather all the stuff, or someone manage the mic system, or someone manage the audiovisual projector. Some activity where they start feeling attached and the sense of responsibility towards that community. So they have this responsibility. I am managing the mic system here. And people recognize me, because at that age, they want to get recognized.
Recognition, right.
So this is one way, the physical element, taking them, getting them involved physically into various religious activities, giving awan, reciting Quran and all this.
Right.
Emotionally, what I mean is getting them involved into recitations. You know, the eulogies at the beginning of the program,
Ziyarat-e
Ashura, supplications, Ziyarat-e Ashura, and different things, Hadith-e Kissa and all that stuff, so that they read and then they translate, they understand, and then there's an emotional build-up and emotional attachment in them towards the Islam, especially the eulogies where they recite the musiba and the challenges and the difficulties that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had to face in the battlefield of Karbala. And this is where they realize that all that Imam Hussein alayhi salam has sacrificed for them to continue on the straight path. So there's an emotional attachment happening here.
Right, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
Break and come back. And
right, yeah, that would be good.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Dear Sheikh, just before we went on a break, you were saying that we need to get our children involved in religion physically, emotionally, and also
logically. Okay, so emotionally, physically, and logically.
Right.
Now, why do I want this logical element? And according to me, it's one of the most important elements.
Yeah, what do you mean when you say logically?
Logically.
Involved? Right.
The religion should not appeal to them at emotional level only. It should appeal to their logic. It should appeal to their common sense. It should make sense to them.
So it's pure reasoning and all that.
Pure reasoning.
Right.
It is only then that they will be convinced and they will remain steadfast and focused on the path of
because
religion.
Because the mind and reason, it is the essence of our faith,
exactly.
of our iman.
Exactly. And today, the curriculum system, you know, I don't know how many parents actually look at what is being taught to their kids in their school and colleges and open their books and look at it like what is being taught. I rarely think, very few parents are really deeply interested in what is being taught to them in the college. But the children, the teenagers, the youth are being taught questions and doubts pertaining to their religion. Like, religion is opium, you know, there's a very famous statement. So they're being taught that these are fancy stuff, mythologies, you know, and it's good
come to
have
liberalism instead.
Correct. And,
about
and,
capitalism, all of these
and,
ideologies.
And they say that this is the real world. And what you're talking about, religion, is all fantasy. It's, you know, sci-fi. So good to have, but not necessarily practical.
Yes.
So here we need to use our logical proofs that are there as part of our religion that proves that there is a God. And there has to be a God, the necessity of it. And what kind of a God is it? Is it an infinite God? Is it a finite God? Does it necessarily need to have a body? All those proofs, when you explain it to them logically, rationally, and, you know, making appealing to their common sense, And if they're convinced about it, then they'll remain on the path of religion.
Because it is based upon reasoning and not just emotions blind faith.
And this is where it plays a great role, that when they go to school, when they go to college, they might not be able to answer back to their professor or a teacher, but deep down inside, they know that what I believe in is the eternal truth.
They
will
conviction.
Not leave that path.
Right.
So that's why at this age, we need to provide answers.
But how do we do that? Because many parents in this day and age, they are not themselves knowledgeable about these things. They were raised in an Islamic way, and that's why they are, unfortunately, or a good thing, they're Muslims. Not because they sat down one day and they were like in deep in thought about who is God and why God and all that kind of stuff. So how should we teach the teenagers this?
I can suggest two ways here. One, that the parents themselves take up the responsibility to read some material.
So educate themselves first.
Right. And I have come across parents who say that, you know, if an Islamic book is more than 50 pages, I'm not going to read it. Right.
That's not a very good mindset, I would say.
That's not a good mindset. On the contrary, I asked this parent that, have you read Harry Potter? And like, yes, all the 7 volumes. And I'm like, that's 600 pages each volume. So you've read
the Lord of the Rings, like, yeah. God have mercy.
So you've read thousands of pages of fantasy and novels and stories.
But that's okay.
That's okay.
Right.
And for religion, you're not willing to do that? And like, no, it's so boring and all that. Now, the challenge is that if parents don't educate themselves, they will not be able to guide and educate the children. So this is first way.
Right.
We'll deal with that.
Let's take the next step, dear Sheikh, after a quick break.
Ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "The best among you is he who learns the Quran and teaches it."
Welcome back to your listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Dear Sheikh, just before we went on a break, we were discussing the ways that we can make our teenagers, make our young, engage their minds logically in religion. How that they may build their iman, their faith, their conviction through logical means. Now, we said the first step to do that was for the parents themselves, first of all, to educate themselves.
Correct.
Now, what about the second step, Dear Sheikh?
Right. Let me just complete that first part, that if if the parents don't educate themselves, even if we look at the second step, the parents have to educate themselves even in that scenario, because if they don't educate themselves, they'll end up they'll end up with conflicting views, particularly the children. So the first way is the parents should read themselves and educate themselves. If they can't do that, then get a scholar, invite a scholar to your community center on regular days to come and give a half an hour lecture.
To preach, right?
What do? We invite the scholar only during the month of Maha Ramadan. And,
That's the season. When we need to cry and after we fasted for a month.
And Maha Muharram. So you call them for the month of Maha Ramadan, where they come for 10 days, especially the Shab-e Qadr and all that.
Right.
And then he'll talk about Shab-e Qadr and its importance and certain points and the sawab and the amal of Shab-e Qadr. And it's all done, packed up, gone.
See you next year.
And there's nothing about aqaya, the belief system and the proof of God, nothing being discussed there.
Theological beliefs, the logical reasons.
Proofs and reasoning and rational discussions, nothing happening there. In Maha Muharram, there are certain discussions, but not into the necessary depth that is required by the youth and teenagers today. Superficially touching upon it and then getting into the musibah of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. And this is where the parents or the community leaders should invite the scholars on the regular ordinary days or during these special days and tell them.
Like a weekly program every weekend.
A weekly program. Or even in these special occasions, invite them and tell them, please talk about the rational reasoning that'll convince our teenagers.
Make a curriculum. You start from A to all the way to Z.
To Z. So that my son, when he listens to your 20 lectures during Maha Muharram or 15 lectures during Maha Ramadan, he should be convinced that God exists and the God that is infinite. Hakim,
he should be steadfast wise, in his faith.
Omnipotent, and right. all that should get
attributes.
Ingrained.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
Exactly.
So this suggestion is in essence that we should establish a curriculum.
Curriculum, and invite right. the right scholars.
Of course.
And not just send the children. The parents should also attend this program.
They may benefit too as well.
More than benefit, because when the son listens to this program, comes back to right. the father and says, Dad, this is what the scholar has been saying. What do you think? And he goes blank. Have no idea. And like, what? Right. You want me to follow something that you don't follow? You want me to believe in something that you've never heard of? If I want to counter question and discuss, you have no idea what we're discussing. When my father doesn't believe in something, why should I?
But when he is involved, on the other hand.
Exactly. So the father should also attend the program. The mother should also attend the program. The son should also attend the program. The daughter should also attend
Lead
the program.
Lead by example.
And during the dinner, ask your kids. So this is what Maulana was saying today. This is what the scholar was saying today. Do you have a point to counter it? Can you defend that? I say this is wrong. Involve them into a discussion.
We call this a mubahatha for, us as students, as scholars.
Exactly.
We do this,
so
right.
involve him logically. Encourage him to use his reasoning. Encourage him to use his common sense.
Engage him.
Engage him. And this is where he will be convinced about the faith and the belief system, and he will remain steadfast on it and not get
motivated. Also, this is where we clarify all these doubts that may have arisen and the questions.
So when he goes back to his education system, to his college, to his university, among his atheist friends, and they start attacking him, he might not be able to defend all the way, or maybe even be able to defend, but at least he will not become mutazalzal and
shaky. Right. He has a solid background.
Correct. So these are some of the ways to use to attain what you've requested for.
Now, Sheikh, unfortunately, we are out of time, as I would love to continue this discussion, but inshallah, we will continue it on another day.
Inshallah.
I thank you for contributing to this discussion, and also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback, or some comments, please contact us at our email, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20th, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the US and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
Japanese researchers have developed chopsticks that artificially create the taste of salt. They have done this as part of efforts to reduce high levels of sodium intake in Japan. The utensils look like a typical pair of chopsticks, but with a cable and a mini computer worn on the person's wrist. A mild electrical current transmits sodium ions from food through the chopsticks and into the user's mouth. This enhances the taste of salt, requiring less of it in food to achieve the same good taste.
To prevent severe lifestyle-related diseases or to prevent these diseases altogether, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take regularly. Japanese people tend to ingest a large amount of salt in their diet. If we try to avoid taking less salt in a conventional way, we would need to endure cutting out our favorite foods from our diet or endure eating bland food.
The chopsticks have already been clinically tested. Participants say the device enhanced salty taste of low-sodium food by roughly 1.5 times. The engineers are currently refining the chopsticks and hope to commercialize the product next year. The product was jointly developed by Meiji University professor Homei Miyashita and a beverage holding company. Miyashita is best known for his creation of a TV screen that can imitate various flavors. How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Orthman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turn barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western Lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western Lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. The world of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurse, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Zainab Sadat, and you're listening to Youth Station from IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is also Zainab Askari, a co-host of Zainab Sadat. Hi Zainab, assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Hi, thank you.
In this holy month, we have a very, very, you know, interesting day, interesting narrations, interesting things about Night of Destiny.
Since we're in Ramadan al-Kareem, may Allah accept your worships and your deeds.
Because it's said, you know, that the hours, its hours are the best of the hours, its days are the best of the days, its minutes are the best of the minutes. You know, we have narrations that a fasting person, his breath, his sleeping is all worship. So may Allah accept all that from you.
Yes, for you too.
Thank you.
As you know, we're going to talk about one of the most nights of this month, known as Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny. Yes.
Zainab, is that one night or is that several nights?
You know, there are different narrations about when the Holy Quran was descended to our Holy Prophet Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There are several narrations about the exact Laylatul Qadr. We have one special night of destiny. That night is quite different from other nights, since the angels, you know, the angels we have in Quran, Laylatul Qadr khayrun min alf shahr. This special night is better than 1,000 nights in a year.
Wow.
Yes, and the angels descend to the earth and they listen to whatever we say, and that is quite some kind of an offer.
All right.
You know, some kind of a big offer for us. We have different narrations that the Night of Destiny is whether on the 19th night of Ramadan or 21st or 23rd night of Ramadan. And we...
So it's just one night, but there's a doubt about
night,
the dates.
But yes, there is the discussion about the exact night. So...
Well, I am more interested about the night itself. The night, you called it the night, is better than 1,000 months. That is so much, you know.
Yes, yes.
So what is this night about? Why is it called this Night of Destiny?
You know, the importance of this night is due to the fact that we as people on this very special night have the opportunity to ask God to change our destiny. We can, you know, somehow enhance the situation for ourselves in the coming year.
So can we?
Yes, we can. And that is why people stay awake, stay wide awake all the night.
People carrying Quran on their head.
Yes, you know, they take a vow. They ask God to just
forgive their
mistakes and to bless them with his maghfira, rahma, or blessings, and bestow them his blessing. And that is why this night is so great and important for us, you know, because we can change something about our lives in this very special night.
Is there some particular time period, like for how long can you change your destiny?
I have heard that until adhan al-subh, until the
morning prayers.
Morning prayers. The night is considered as Laylatul Qadr until
the night of destiny.
Yes.
I think there are narrations that your destiny is written for a year or so. I have a question in my mind, like if we say that our destiny is already written, like when we are born, our destiny is written.
Yes, then, predetermined somehow.
Yeah, like how are we able to change it? Like, or what is the concept of making du'as or supplications, especially in this night, and when a person is born with a written destiny?
You know, yes, I accept that, and it is an accepted fact that our destiny has been pre-written from the very first day of our creation.
Okay.
Yes, we all accept that. But there are some opportunities that God gives us to just make changes in those things that are going to happen to us. For example, imagine a store or a shop, a big shop, that you every day go in there and just buy things you want. But on some special days in the year, the shop or the market offers some discounts and you can buy lots of things with a much more cheaper price, in a much more lesser
than
price.
Than the normal prices.
Yes. And Laylatul Qadr is, if you want to put it in a comparison, it's somehow like this.
Okay.
God has given us the opportunity to ask him, to beg him, in fact, to in fact make our destiny better and our encounters in life would change.
All right. You remind me of the story. You know, there's a story wherein we say, like, I asked God, when I have a pre-written destiny, then why supplications? Why du'as? Then why I need to ask you? Because it's already pre-written. My making du'a or supplications does not make sense. Then the story goes on and says, God replied, maybe I have written whatever you ask me.
Yes.
So maybe it's in your
so
destiny.
Beautiful. Yes.
Maybe whatever you ask me and I'll provide you that. So asking supplication is necessary. And with these supplications, with these, you know, du'as, we can change our destiny for sure.
Yes.
But I have one more question, since, like, you know, just to expand the topic. When our destiny is pre-written, or when we write our destiny in this night, making supplications, making dua, standing for whole night in the prayers and putting on Quran and on our heads and asking for prayers, giving Allah the name of all imams, telling him for his sake and for his sake, please forgive me and give me this and that, we are making so many requests. I have this question that do we even have choice? Like, whatever is written on that night, all right? So does that mean throughout the whole year, we don't have any other choice we are left with no choice. It's all force.
No, it's not.
Okay.
When we're talking about the opportunity that we have in that night, it means that we're not forced. As I said, you know, our destiny has been pre-written. But
can we change things?
God has given us the opportunity to ask him and beg him, and
so we
will change things.
So we have choices, you mean?
Yes, yes,
so like
definitely.
How I want you to
imagine that you don't have a house for yourself of your own. And in case you ask God and beg him in the Laylatul Qadr, night of destiny, to give you a house of your own. So, do you think after you're asking God on that special night, God would give you a house?
I think that house is not just a thing that God can give me. He can give me much more than I can even imagine. He understands,
yes.
He
very
knows,
good.
He
yes.
is this, he's that. But there's a, like, you know, we have a concept of tawassul, the concept of connectivity in mm-hmm. Islam. Like, you know, you refer to Ahlul Bayt, you refer to the progeny of Prophet Muhammad, or the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, himself and his, you know, you refer to his family and you say Allah that for the sake of Prophet, for the sake of, you know, the Ahlul Bayt, for the sake of Imams, please give me this and that. And that's how you make the connection. God gives you everything. I'll give you an example. I just made a donation of some $30, okay, recently, for the shrine of Imam Hussain al-Issa. Mm-hmm. And I had no intention of, like, taking something back, asking Imam, begging Imam, please give me this and that for $30.
Yeah.
I just gave it selflessly with very much sincerity. And I tell you, I got something within no time. I received a thing in my home that I was in very much need of. And it costed somewhat around, say, $300. So something of $300.
Interesting.
Yeah. I donated just $30 and I returned. I got back $300 thing I was very much in need of. So without even asking, when a servant of God, Imam Hussain al-Islam, can give me, why not Allah? And especially in these nights, especially in the days of this month are called the best of the days. The hours are called the best of the hours. And these nights, the special nights, which you rightly mentioned, that are better than 1,000 months. So why not? Why he cannot listen? So he listens without you, you know, asking him. But Allah says, call upon me and I will respond. So I personally think that it's not all about the wealth, like the luxurious life, the house and all.
That's what I wanted to say.
Because yeah. I, as a human, mm-hmm. think that this is better for me. But my Creator knows much better what is better for me, what is good for me, what is bad for me.
Yeah.
And if I am asking for something and he's not responding to that, there is definitely some wisdom hidden behind. You know, he sometimes gives me back with some, he gives me good health. He gives me patience. He gives me extra. He gives me the opportunity to stay away from sins. That in itself is a great blessing. So
yes.
not only he gives you back materialistically, he also grows you
spiritually. Blessings, yes.
Yeah.
Things that you need, but you even might not know what exactly they are, the things that you need. And definitely God has plans. Yes, God is the omniscient.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Zainab, you know, let's give our topic a new direction. I think there are people who believe that when everything is written, what I am here supposed to do, I have life with force, I am living with force, and everything is by force.
Yes.
And especially they attach this force to religion. And when everything is pre-written, everything is by force, we don't have any choice. Do you think we don't have any choice in the life, like we don't have any choice of selection, which way to go, what to do? Because you came, you know, you are born in a particular country by force. You do not
you're obligated to be born, yes, in this situation. Your family members, you cannot change your family members. Yeah. You cannot change your features, your race, your gender.
There are a lot of things that are by force, but not everything is related to religion. For example, you get hungry. That's force. You cannot remain all the time like I say, I am book, I am not feeling hungry, I'm not feeling thirsty. Like in Ramadan, we feel so much of hunger and thirst.
Yes.
And so this is also a force, but it's up to me. We also have a choice. It's up to me what I eat. Do I eat haram or do I eat halal? Do I eat something that's forbidden or do I eat something that I have a choice to
eat? Am I permitted to eat or not? Especially in Ramadan.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So we have choices as well as force. There are certain things that are as force, but they are in all religions. They are natural. And there are certain things that are a choice. And we can change our destiny with the supplications, especially in these nights. Thank you so much, Zainab, for being
with us. You're welcome, and thank you for participating in this discussion and giving us lots of information. Okay, dear listeners, I ask you to keep us in your du'as and in your prayers on these blissful nights and days, and do not forget us in your special prayers in Ramadan.
You too, Zainab, do not forget me.
And you too. And
inshallah,
I really need your du'as, really need your prayers and positive energy. Assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَبَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ قَرْيَةٍ نَذِيرًا
And if we had willed, we could have sent into every city a warner.
Brothers and sisters, we are now going to talk about the 51st verse of this chapter. وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَبَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ قَرْيَةٍ نَذِيرًا And if we had pleased, certainly we would have raised up a warner in every town. Dear listeners, this verse is somehow talking about the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam as the last and the seal of the prophets. And it also talks about the comprehensiveness of the religion of the Prophet of Islam. Because this verse is implying that no prophet was appointed anywhere with him since he can control the entire society, since he is able to control everyone, and no one else is needed. He has such a rank, he has such a state, that prophethood is closed with his existence. So this is what we can infer first and foremost from this verse. It is also possible that some polytheists used this pretext, along with other ones, that it was better that Allah appointed a prophet in every village and city. But in answer to them, the Holy Quran says, وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَبَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ قَرْيَةٍ نَذِيرًا If we had pleased, we would have raised up a warner in every town, certainly. So, this verse is a reason for magnificence of the Prophet's rank. This verse is showing the necessity of the unity of leadership. This verse can help us understand the heaviness of the duty of leadership of one society, that it has to be comprehensive, and it is a very heavy responsibility.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن فيه
أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Now, there is also a lot of discussions about how one should rule a society and how we should decide upon the rulers. But the point that is taken for granted in every society is that we need a leader for everyone. We need a leader for every nation and society. The Holy Quran says, وَإِن مِّنْ أُمَّةٍ إِلَّا خَلَى فِيهَا نَذِيرٌ. There did not exist one society or ummah without a warner between them. But this does not necessarily mean that we need to have one separate ruler or in this case, prophet, in every society and nation, because this would hurt the comprehensiveness. This would hurt the state and rank of the prophet, of the one who wants to be the ruler of the whole society. So that is why the Holy Quran says, وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَبَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ قَرِيَةٍ نَذِيرًا. If we could, we could have done this to raise up a warner in everywhere, but of course this would ease your responsibility, this would help you from some aspects, but this does not necessarily mean that we should practically do it in the world, because this would bring so many other challenges and problems. So this being said, we understood that we need a ruler and a leader for every society, but we do not need to have separate leaders. The last point regarding this verse, brothers and sisters, is the fact that prophethood and leadership of the nations and ummah in the Islamic world specifically is something that only can be decided by the words of the Almighty Allah and no one else. This is not something that the people can start to make or they can start to choose from among themselves. This is what the words of this verse are explicitly telling us. وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَبَعَثْنَا. These pronouns in the verbs شِئْنَا and لَبَعَثْنَا are translated into us. If we wanted, if we had pleased, we would have raised up a warner. This means it only relies on the hands of the Almighty Allah and no one else. It is only His right to choose. And we as the believers, actually we do not have the abilities, we do not have that much intellect to set a leader from among ourselves for such a crucial matter. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum ورحمة الله وبركاته.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss the political crisis in Pakistan, a history of American interference in the country, and external dimensions of Imran Khan's ouster. And we shall also take a look at efforts by Western and Eastern power blocs to court India in the wake of the Ukraine war and growing strains in New Delhi-Washington ties.
Amid the deepening political crisis in Pakistan, opposition leader Shehbaz Sharif has taken over as a new premier, with the cricketer-turned-politician Imran Khan back on the streets, mobilizing his supporters against what he calls an imported government. Khan's repeated claims that the United States orchestrated the regime change conspiracy against his Pakistan Tehreek-Insaf government has once again brought to fore America's interference in the Muslim-majority country's internal affairs, both in the civilian and military spheres.
The U.S. military-industrial complex has a long history of interference in other countries, including Pakistan. Back in 1958, the notorious American spy agency, CIA, engineered the first military coup in Pakistan, which ended 11 years of civilian rule in the South Asian country. It brought to power a U.S.-friendly military dictator, General Ayub Khan. That set a dangerous precedent and paved the path for subsequent military coups. The country's 75-year history has been marked by multiple military coups, corruption scandals, and political infighting. U.S. interests in Pakistan have primarily been influenced by the country's strategic location. In the 1950s and 1960s, Pakistan was made part of the U.S.-led Cold War alliances to contain the communists because of its location close to the southern reaches of the Soviet Union. In the 1980s, Pakistan was used by Americans to overthrow the Soviet regime in neighboring Afghanistan because of their geographical proximity. After the events of 9/11, Americans again roped in Pakistan to fight Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The 20-year military adventure turned into a big disaster. Over the years, rulers in Pakistan maintained close ties with the U.S. for their survival and to keep the funds flowing. That proved to be Imran Khan's undoing, as he took a different path and tried to assert his independence.
The overthrow of the Imran Khan government in Pakistan and the ensuing political crisis has many external dimensions. The recent developments in Afghanistan and Ukraine led to an escalation of tensions between Washington and Islamabad, and Khan's calculated move to forge stronger alliances with regional powers, China and Russia. The new coalition government led by